You're listening to The Wildcast with Calvin Coyles.
Welcome to The Wildcast. I'm your host, Calvin Coyles, international speaker, best-selling author, and your personal growth mentor. Each week, I answer your questions in wellness, income, love, lifestyle, and direction, as well as a few epic interviews with thought leaders from around the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Wildcast. I'm the host of the Master Coach series here. My name is Jason. I'm your head trainer and coach here at Wild Success. And today I'm joined by Jesse Jackson, who can only really be described as a life transformation coach. So what she does is she takes people that are stuck in the depths of just no hope, no direction, don't know what to do with their lives, and really helps them overhaul every single area of life. So I'll be very excited to have this conversation. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jason. Really happy to be here.
Beautiful. So let's get started with that. At what point do you say, you know what, I want to help people who have absolutely no hope and I'm going to help them sort of turn everything around? How did you come to that point?
Well, I guess I've always had an interest in helping people, except that I was trying to help them from a position of weakness myself. So I saw that. I came across a book by Louise Hay called You Can Change Your Life, and it did. So I read that book and changed my own life, and then decided that I wanted to, from a better position, a position of personal power, to help others transition from being where I was or somewhere similar to a position of power to be able to live the life that they've always wanted to live.
Right. So that book was for you, was that the tipping point of realizing, hey, I can be the one to take ownership, take charge of my life and change things?
Definitely. I had a victim mindset for a very long time, like a lot of people, bit of trauma in life, bit of, you know, sort of being beaten down and stuff like that. Took that on board as my own beliefs and then just thought that that was life. That's just the way it was. And it was Louise Hay that said, well, no, it doesn't have to be that way. If you change the way that you think, you change the way that you feel about yourself, you can change your life. And she was 100% correct. And so moving forward with some of the tools and tips that she brought to light for me, I've been able to completely transform my own life. And that's what I like to be able to do for others.
Beautiful. So there's obviously a tipping point that is required for people who are in a state where they have no hope and nothing. And then there's, you know, because then those people who wouldn't even look at that book, they would just completely walk past it because they're like, oh, that's BS, right? So what do you feel like is the point or the things that people need to get from the sort of completely despondent, nothing's going to work, to the point, to the open of possibilities? What was that journey like?
Well, it was an interesting one because it was one that sort of, it ebbed and flowed. There was a few times where I thought, yep, I'm going to change my life, and tried something and then fell flat on my face and went, wow, this isn't going to work. And then sort of would try a different direction and get up for a little bit and then, nah, this isn't good. Is this the way you want to live? Is this all that there is for life? And I decided that no, there's got to be something more. And I can't tell you exactly what did it for me. I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, advanced degenerative disc disease in my lower back, to the point where I couldn't even walk. I live in a caravan and travel around, and I would get out of bed and I'd literally roll out of bed, clunk down onto my hands and knees, crawl to the door of my caravan to put my shoes on, and then hobble until I could get to a point where I could walk again. So I hit absolute rock bottom. I was told that I wouldn't be able to walk again in 2 years' time. The Crohn's disease, without getting too graphic, I was on the toilet 18 to 20 times a day. I was in constant pain. So I hit absolute rock bottom. None of my relationships were working. And very much given all of that in a victim mindset. And I guess I always thought there was more, and I think there's a little bit of a spark of hope in everybody that there is something more. And I think sometimes you need somebody in your corner for a start, but you also need to see perhaps somebody that has been where you are or worse even, and made something happen, made something change. And that inspiration, I think, can sometimes be the spark to go, okay, well, look, if that person can do it, so can I. And I think that's probably the tipping point for me. I was at absolute rock bottom. She'd had a very traumatic life and managed to turn her life around and create such a wonderful, abundant, loving, beautiful existence, well, if she can do it, well, then maybe I can. And I think perhaps maybe that's what I'm looking to do moving forward, is to be that inspiration. You know, I not only can I walk 4 years later, but I walk 5 kilometres, 10 kilometres a day. I haven't had a Crohn's flare in over 2 years, not on any medication, all through mindset changes, diet changes, exercise changes, creating positive boundaries, that sort of thing. And I really think it's just having that person that's been where you are, maybe somewhere worse, that can go, hey, maybe there's another way. Let's look at this, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, you were summed it up nicely yourself, saying that you're kind of wanting to be the person that Louise sort of represented for yourself for yes. those other people, and make it more accessible for the people who, you know, maybe aren't as you know, quote unquote into the woo-woo yet, yeah. If you wanted to use that phrase, and then, you know, be that sort of stepping stone for people to yeah, as you said, change your life. So no, that's a beautiful story and a really beautiful mission that you're sort of here to help and support people with. And is that what you find with a lot of the clients, a lot of the people that you speak to, is that what sort of is the key for them, or what are some of the keys that they need to understand that you find in the journey?
Absolutely. I've got a couple of clients that has been the key, is just having that person in your corner that allows you to make your own decisions, to take ownership of your own life. And I think that's really a really important distinction that I love about coaching, is that it empowers the other person to take control of their own life and to move forward. And I do believe that the keys with majority of the clients that I've worked with is having somebody in your corner that you can trust, that is on your side, that has walked through the fires of hell and had the dark nights of the soul and has walked through the other side, that can be a shining light and say, okay, all right, well, this is where you are at now. So what are we going to do? What are you going to do? How do you feel about it? And I think it's about right asking the right questions and just helping them find their own way, because it's different for everybody.
Mm. It really is. And you bring up a really interesting point, right? And it's something that there's sort of two schools of thought around, right? A lot of coaches are like, how can I coach someone? Number one, how can I coach someone through something that I haven't personally been through? And a lot of people struggle with that idea. But this also comes down to the idea of, you know, who your niche is and who you're sort of looking to help. Because if you could still be an expert in the coaching process, right? Like, I could still help the people that you're working with. Now, you might get faster results, quicker, better, because they're more trusting of your opinion and your sort of support, because you've been there, done that, right? And that's all well and good. It doesn't say that I couldn't help those people. You would just be more well equipped to help those people, nor would that be necessarily the target people that I would tend to work with. Doesn't mean that the process still wouldn't help them, but it's just about understanding, hey, there are a particular subset or a group of people that most coaches are specialized almost to work with their experience. And it's good to lean into that. Right? Not saying that people couldn't work with everyone, but it's like your unique experience has given you a group of people that you really want to work with and can really effectively help. And I think that that's probably a really good message for a lot of coaches, is to lean into your expertise. Like, you don't have to have been through every single little thing to help those outlier cases, but lean into what you're good at, lean into the experiences that you've had. And as you say, there's an element of exposing yourself and being vulnerable and being open with people. Let them know, hey, you're a human too. You make mistakes. You're not the perfect coach. If you were the perfect coach, you probably wouldn't be coaching, because, you know, you'd be too perfect for, oh, I couldn't work with them until I was better, right? Like, I think that that's a big thing that especially new coaches need to take on board.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Jason. And look, I have no expertise in business or anything like that. But I believe if you ask the right questions, you don't need to have the answers, because your client will have them. So I agree completely. It's great to have a niche to be able to lean into. I do believe that your coaches are capable of coaching just about anybody, because ultimately it is the client's ownership and the client's own answers that moves them forward anyway. It's just about asking the right questions. But to have the people that you do really want to work with and have a passion for is definitely a bonus.
Yeah, that's what will give you the fuel. If you, people ask all the time, well, what should my client target market be? It's like, who are the people that you could help and speak to day in, day out, that would give you fuel, that would give you energy, be like, oh my God, even if you're tired at the end of the day, I helped all these people. I can't wait to be able to work with similar people again tomorrow. And that's the angle that people forget about a lot, is you could work with anyone and everyone, right? But if you had a subset of people that really lit you up to work with, then it makes coaching and it makes the whole rest of the journey worth it. Otherwise, you're like, oh yeah, I spoke to these clients. I didn't love it, but you know, it pays the bills. And then you might as well just be working another job, right? And you end up burning out a lot quicker. So I really loved the bit that you said around, you know, you can still coach people because all of the answers are inside the client anyway. I think that's something that coaches miss out a lot, is asking more clarifying questions. Like, if you don't understand, then require the client to justify what they've said and explain what they've said. Because often the things that they say, if you don't understand them, it's probably coming from a hidden belief system or value structure that they've got that they're not fully aware of. And they're like, oh, well, why do I believe that that's not possible, right? Like, you want to come to it with as little like presupposing as possible. So that way, when you come to the conversation, you're like, really? What do you mean you can't do that? That makes no sense. Like, why couldn't you do that? Like, elaborate to me, explain to me, give me the answers that are inside of you. And then they're like, oh, holy shit, maybe I've been carrying around a bit of baggage.
Exactly. I think curiosity is definitely a trait that coaches, if possible, should carry with them, because you know, the more you get to know what their belief systems are and as Calvin would say, their map of the world, if the more you can understand that, the more easily you can sort of guide through any sort of barriers that come up. So it's brilliant. The one thing I will say that is, if you do happen to find your niche and you do happen to find those people that really light you up, I'm a musician as well. And when I'm on stage, I get this amazing buzz from being on stage. But I will say that I equally get the same buzz from working with clients that I resonate with. So it really is a very fulfilling process. If you can find, you know, those people that that area that you really want to work with, it's just as healing for you as a coach as it is for your clients.
Yeah, 100%. There's an old saying. It's like when a coaching session or when a speaker's on stage, two things can happen. The audience can be transformed and the speaker can be transformed. And it's the same thing with coaching. We often find people that are in the thick of what oftentimes we need to work through as well. And it's a very valuable tool to be able to recognize that and then bring that awareness. Obviously, you kind of save it for after the session, but you bring that awareness to yourself and then work on it later. Have you found that some of those things have come up for you in those sessions?
Definitely. I find that a lot of the time, I don't know whether you could look at it from a woo-woo perspective that you're attracting a mirror of your own self, or you could look at it from a scientific point of view that your frames are similar, whichever way you want to look at it. I do find that clients' lives in different ways often are mirroring some of the things that you are working through with yourself. And I find that incredibly helpful, because a lot of the time when you're in it, you don't see it. But when you see it in somebody else, then you can look at the situation for yourself and go, okay, all right, well, that now makes a bit more sense. And like you said, save it till after the session and then do your own inner work to then work through that. And that's incredibly healing. And I that's the one thing that I love about Wild, not to get too sentimental and give too much of a plug, but that's one thing that I do love about Wild, is that idea of healing each other and sort of moving up the emotional scale and up the just to be in a better, more positive, more supportive arena of life. It's like the five people that you most associate in life, you are the sum total of. And that was something that resonated with me when I first started with Wild. I was in a relationship that was very toxic and unreliable, unstable. And it was actually being in Wild and changing those five people that got me out of that in a completely different world. So, you know, at the end of the day, when you've got a community of like-minded people, you're all coaching each other, this mirroring with your client and yourself, it's just helping to raise the mindset and elevate humanity. And I just think that's fantastic.
Oh, beautiful. Well, we appreciate that. And hey, if you're looking to get rid of a toxic partner, just come join Wild. Apparently,
that's right. it works.
Yeah, it works. It works. I mean, but you raise some really good points there as well. You're not going to, a few people do ask these questions in our trainings. Like, well, what happens if something comes up and you feel a bit either triggered, or you have that awareness of something that someone's saying? It's like, if you're focused fully on being of service to the client, you probably won't even realize that something's coming up for you until later on or even after the session sometimes. And if you're finding things are coming up for you, you're focused too much on yourself in the session as opposed to being of service to the client, because where focus goes, energy flows, right? Like, you'll probably end up hanging up afterwards and being like, oh my God, that's actually relevant for me right now. And you might have that little light bulb moment. But for those times, I guess, for you where it has come up and you've maybe recognized it in a session, what have been some of your tips to kind of keep it contained, keep it focused on the client, or has that not been as much of an issue for you?
I wouldn't call it an issue so much as a benefit, to be honest. And I sort of compartmentalize, if it makes any sense. If something does trigger and I go, oh, hang on, I'm going through that too, I make sort of a mental note of it and then almost have a filing cabinet somewhere back here that I can go, okay, well, I'll just pop that back there. And then once the session's done, you know, sort of come down and then pull that back out of the filing cabinet and go, okay, well, look, you know, this is what was up for them. This is what's up for me. That's very similar. You know, what would I say to myself if I was my coach in that situation? And I think that's really beneficial, having those tools, the ability to be able to coach yourself through things. And I do a lot of mirror work, which is something that Louise Hay does as well. So 99% of the time I am my own coach, but I also have coaches. And I think that's another important point to make, is that even though we may be coaches, it's very important to have a coach, I think. And so I look to other mentors as well, that if I can't make sense of what was triggered for me in a session, I'll take that to my coach and then we'll work through it.
Yeah, exactly. And there are, it's no one is, the thing is, like, there's no level at which, like, coaching stops, right? Everyone needs someone outside of themselves, no matter how good, how prestigious they are. They need someone outside of themselves to be able to look in on the situation without the emotional buy-in and the biases that we tend to have as human beings. No matter, I don't care who it is, everyone can benefit from having that outside perspective, that outside voice. Coaches, non-coaches, you know, Tony Robbins, whoever it is, right? Calvin Coyles, you know, they all need coaches. Except for me, though, I'm too perfect to know. Sarcasm course, for those, yes, who don't know me too well. So, I mean, you touched on a couple of really, really big factors in there. Number one, you're obviously needing a coach, but people sometimes struggle with the idea of not dealing with something as soon as it comes up, or the ability and the power that comes with being able to say, hang on, okay, cool, I know I'm feeling this right now. To me, it reminds me a lot of journaling. Right? The idea and the purpose of journaling being to get all of those little tabs that are open out and put them somewhere. So that's because a lot of people keep thinking and they keep themselves up at night because they worry about, oh, I've got to do this tomorrow. I've got to take care of this. I've got this thing to do. And I would say that, especially for myself, compared with my wife, who actually similarly went through a journey with fibromyalgia, Louise Hay, and coached, you know, people through autoimmune conditions as well. So very, very similar stories. And the idea of journaling and being able to write things down and get things out of your head is so important, just because you can then just, yeah, you've got it compartmentalized. You've got it over there. That's like, yeah, cool. We'll be dealt with. It is on the paper. It lives there now. My head is free. And it's the ability to do the same thing in a session, to say, yes, I am recognizing this is coming up. I'm not avoiding it. I'm not hiding from it or running from it. I'm not trying to, you know, squash it down. I will deal with it. Right now is not the best time, but it will be dealt with. It's like on a proper to-do list, right? So then having that, and I think people struggle with that with a lot of different areas of life. They struggle to really actively say, I'll do that later and mean it, because there's so many things that slip by. And so it either gets dealt with in the moment, or it's, you know, not getting dealt with at all. And then it just keeps coming back up and sort of gnawing away at you. And I think that is something that especially coaches need to remember, is like, hey, I'm here for the client. Put a bookmark, put a post-it note in it. That's interesting. I'll dwell on that when I've got the mental space to, but for right now, I'm here with the client. I think it's a very valuable skill to have.
Absolutely. And look, I couldn't agree more with the journaling side of things. I was somebody that ran a lot from my any feeling that wasn't absolute positivity. I'd run
toxic
from
toxic positivity in the culture.
Toxic positivity, exactly. I was totally there. I'd push everything else away or down, never deal with it. And I really truly believe that that's how we end up being unwell, is because the body then starts to store too much of this. And it's got nowhere to go. So I couldn't agree more with the idea of journaling and just getting it out of your system on the piece of paper and then deal with it later. Sometimes the act of journaling itself is enough, and other times it's something that you need to revisit later. But I couldn't agree more. I think journaling is a really powerful tool.
Yeah, I think, and a lot of people, I think there's too many, people put too many rules around the way that they do things like meditation, journaling, all of these like daily things that, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but you know, the higher up people in the business world and the personal development world will tell you, oh, do these things every day for a more productive morning and get up at 5 a.m. and all of those things. And then we measure ourselves to that stick. And if we're not doing that, we're not meditating for 30 minutes a day and writing out our emotional journal. It's a slight aside, but I remember seeing a funny meme. It's always a funny meme. That was a young millionaire, a 25-year-old millionaire's tips on becoming a millionaire. It's like get up at 5 a.m. and go for a workout, meditate for 30 minutes, keep a gratitude journal, inherit $1 million from millionaire parents, right? Obviously step four is the least important, but there's so many people that measure themselves to that stick of I have to do it in this way. Like meditation, there is no framework that is the most beneficial for anyone. The same thing with journaling. I find my journaling, I initially intended, and this is a true thing for me, a couple of weeks ago, I intended to do some like journaling every morning when I got into work, just for like 15 minutes, just to write some things out. And then I realized that yes, it's tactile, but number one, my handwriting's never been the best. It doesn't bring up the best memories for me in school. Jason's handwriting could improve. That was the note I always got. But I then realized, I was like, I don't feel the need to do it because I tend to work through things very much mentally and just in periods of deep thought and consideration of things. I'll work through my emotions. I'll bring them up. I'll be like, okay, cool. Why was I actually feeling this way? I was actually feeling that way because of these things. All right. And I'll work it out in my head. And then I just sort of breathe and let it go. And sometimes I'll be like on the train. I have a good period of time when I catch the public transport in or I'm in the car and I've just got sort of a mindless podcast or something else on in the background or whatever, you know, 93.7, and I'm listening to music. And that is what I realized is my form of journaling, which is why when I don't get that time, I notice that I tend to get a very pent up. Couple of days I was driving into work and I was driving in with my wife a couple of days I lost that time and I realized I was feeling very pent up. So last night I had a bit of time. I got to go to the gym last night, had a bit of time to myself when I got home, and I was able to sort of, you know, then have a chat with my wife and let things go. But it's like, that's my form of journaling. Yes. You've got to think about what is the purpose of this, to get things out, to do whatever, and find the right one for you.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There's no one size fits all. And there's a lot of pressure. You're 100% correct, put on by people who have been in the self-help business, the spiritual growth business, that, yep, just follow these million steps. And it was funny, actually, I was listening to a book the other day. I can't remember what it was. The Not Nice book. I can't remember, by Dr. Azir or something like that. And it's about, as I'm an audiobook girl, so it's about 14 hours long, and I've just driven from Melbourne to Darwin, so I have plenty of time. But
that's a drive. You gotta
it's a good one. But there were so many steps involved in going from this point to this point. I'm like, holy crap, you know, that's too much. And the thing is, when you're working with people that have been, you know, they're either at rock bottom or they're at the point of despair or they're at a point of despondency, giving them 20 million steps to do and this will fix your life just seems overwhelming. Mm. So I'm with you. Whatever works as you for an individual, if that means just having that time to yourself, which I find really important, I've got to have my own time as well, just to sort myself out, and then I'll have the time in the world for everybody else, but you must have that time. I think that especially if, again, I work with people that are at the absolute level of despondency where, well, what's the point? If you can just do one thing, and this is my entire ethos, if you can just do one thing that moves you forward in the direction you want to go, and that's all you can manage, good enough. Well done. Well done. Just one thing. If it's as simple as reach out to a friend when you're feeling down and out, great, well done. If it's as simple as getting out of bed and cleaning up your home and that's all you can manage in that day, well done. You know, this idea that we need to do 50 million things in order to heal our lives, that's lovely when you get to that level. But to begin with, just finding things that work for you, you know, whether it is physically writing something down, or whether it's just taking that mental time, or whether it's listening to a piece of music or going for a walk, whatever it is that you need to do to get that peace within yourself, that's the right thing.
Yeah, I think people just are so disconnected. And I mean, it's especially useful for coaches, for people in this industry as well, because, you know, you've got to be able to really manage, not necessarily manage, but really be aware of your emotions and the state that you're in, because you're showing up for another human being, and that can be quite taxing from time to time. So, and obviously for myself, you know, we teach coaches, we train them. So you kind of got to be on at those moments in time. So to know what your processes are for getting grounded and getting back into sort of the space you need to be in is so valuable. And too many people are disconnected from what really works for them because they've been so focused on, I remember seeing hearing this a couple of days ago, and it rang very true for me. It's like, well, a lot of people ask, well, what should I do on average? Like, what's the best practice for these things? It's like, well, it's such an individual process. You've got to figure that out for yourself. If 50% of men were 5'5" and the other 50% were 5'10", the average shirt would be, if you wanted to take the mean, you know, going back to high school maths, the mean would be 5'7.5". And that shirt would fit neither men properly.
That's right.
So it's like, you can say, well, what is the average or what should it do? It's like, but, and that's all well and good, but how often should I journal? What should I journal about? How should I, like, all of these rules around it. It's like, well, let's think about the outcome first. Yeah. What is the intention of this? It's to either get things off your mind or get things out on the page, work through things, bring awareness to things. Like if that is the method that would work best for you to do it, then 100% do it. If your best way of doing it would just be to lie down and shut your eyes for 5 or 10 minutes and just kind of, you know, think about things and just allow stuff to come up, which is probably more in alignment with myself and my personality style, 100%, then do that. But figure out what it is for you, whatever it is that allows you to get to the end result for you, which is the awareness, the processing, the sort of the brain dumping, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly right. And it really is highly personal. As a coach, you can give suggestions as to tools that can be used, but ultimately the client knows what's best for them. And this is where it comes back to asking, being curious and asking, you know, good clarifying questions. They'll come to their own decision as to what's best for them, you know, and which processes are going to best serve them. All of these things are very helpful, all of these self-help books and all of these 10 steps and 20 steps and 5, all very helpful because it gives you an idea of what may be helpful, but ultimately it's up to you.
Yeah, that's the thing that I started enjoying reading personal development books a lot more when I stopped trying to get the entire book concept, and I started being like, if I could get one or two really good ideas out of this book, then I call it a win. And then the pressure's off for trying to embody every single step and all of the different models and things that get put in there. It's like, you know what? Oh, I really like that quote. All right, cool. Done. Easy. You know, throw it away. I'm good. But that's that frame really, really worked for me in terms of getting back into that and stopping trying to embody every single thing that's relevant, because it's not all going to be relevant for you. There's going to be books that change someone's life, like, you know, the Power of Now, amazing book. Allegedly I got 2 pages in and I was like, you know what, this isn't the right book for me right now. It may never be the right book for me right now, right, if I take the concept of the book. So just being aware of your own habits, your own thought processes, what works well for you, and that to me comes down to people giving themselves space.
Yes.
They don't give themselves the space to truly consider. I was on a coaching call last night with a business client who was struggling with the idea of what she wanted. She was kind of 50-50. Half of me wants to build this business because I want to have a legacy and make $20,000 a week and all that kind of stuff. And then her life, she's like, yeah, but I really want to build it so I can spend all this time with my kids and my family. I'm like, a business that makes $20,000 a week is not one that is very conducive to spending a lot of time with your family. So which one is it? Where have you really given yourself the space to see what that looks like? And then you've just got to ask yourself the question, why am I not, if you've got this awareness and now you're not giving yourself the space, well, why not? What am I worried about coming up in that space? Why do I feel the need to fill the space all the time?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it's about being comfortable. It's about getting to know yourself. And I think this whole journey of life is about that. And it's about learning to accept yourself as you are and look at things that are comfortable for you and keep them, polish them up, you know, and celebrate them, and look at things that are uncomfortable for you and go, okay, well, what can I do about this? You know, so, and as you said, it's about having some kind of congruency too, though, rather than sort of pulling in so many different directions. And that's where coaching is really, really helpful. It helps to clarify, well, why do you want this? And why do you want that? And do these things work together? And if they don't, then what's more fulfilling for you? And then following that path. So, you know, it's a brilliant thing to have somebody outside of the situation that can see it and help you to see it.
Yeah, a lot of people really, really, when someone else asks the question, then it's like, oh my God, I had all these realizations, because we are really good at justifying things to ourselves, right? Our cognitive bias, you know, it's where, you know, I think we've talked about it. I think in our online programs, we talked about a scotoma, which is the mental blind spot. If you convince yourself that you don't know where the Vegemite is when you go to the cupboard, then your mind will block it out because it doesn't want you to be wrong. So when you have these belief systems that cause you to believe certain things about yourself or about the world, or that, you know, oh, that's, I don't really know what I want. And then someone else comes along and, you know, pulls the Vegemite and puts it in your face. Then all of a sudden you're like, oh, holy crap, I had no idea that that wasn't there. And then what else am I not thinking about? So having, as you said, that external voice is one of the most valuable things that you can be, is simply that outside questioner, which is, again, why I don't feel like even for coaching, coaches need to go through this 1,000-step process and these, you know, I've got to do a year and a half of training and then I've got to do all of this. And this is, it's like, if you can be an outside perspective and simply ask a few really good questions and lead clients through a very simple process, they're the ones who do a lot of the heavy lifting in the work, because you're only working with people who want to change, who want to shift something. And all your goal is to bring that awareness to their forefront, have them realize, oh shit, hold on, I need to take some time to actually really focus on this. And if they're not taking the time to focus on it, they're not going to get the result, and that's on them, and that's okay.
That's exactly right. It does take a level of commitment to actually want to change. That's one thing that I'm grateful having gone through the coaching training for, is that I spent a lot of time trying to help people that didn't want to be helped. And trying to help people to change that, really, even though they said they wanted to change, their behavior showed the exact opposite. And it was such a waste of, their energy and mine. And it's like trying to move a brick wall with a feather. It's just never going to happen. So, you know, it does take a level of commitment from the client. But as you said, and I really, truly believe this, if you can ask some really poignant questions, they will do all the heavy lifting, and then it's just a matter of helping to offer some tools that they'll then adjust to their own needs, really.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, that's the best thing we can do as coaches, is number one, is just help people that want to be helped. That's the best thing you can do with your time as a coach. Yeah, I guess One final, it's been a really, really great conversation. I really appreciated having it, and kind of wish I didn't have other calls and other things to go to now. But one question I would love to ask is, what's a bit of advice, or one or two key bits of advice that you would love to give to, apart from all the great stuff we've already talked about, to coaches who are just starting out? What are some of the, I guess, the key things that you would want them to keep an eye out on or focus on, or just key bits of advice?
Sure. Well, first things first, have faith in yourself. There's a lot of talk about this confidence thing. And yeah, you know, confidence is definitely important. But the one thing I'll say is have courage, have faith in yourself, trust yourself. That, you know, one of the things I struggled with initially was, you know, well, who am I to coach? You know, this is the position I'm in. Who am I to coach? You know, what do I really know? Well, at the end of the day, you've got your life experiences. That's gold in and of itself. And there is always going to be the perfect client for you. I had a conversation with a fellow coach, and she said, oh, well, everyone's so well advanced spiritually, more so than I am, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I said, yeah, well, that's maybe true that they're more advanced in that department, but you've got knowledge in this department that they don't have because they took a different route. And there's going to be clients that are wanting that. and that are perfect. They don't want the woo-woo spiritual thing. They want a practical person that just has good questions and suspends well and listens well, and that's all that they need. And that, you know, so ultimately, the one thing I would say is that there is a client for every coach. Mm. So don't think that you need to be a certain way or need to have a certain direction or level of knowledge. There is going to be the perfect client for you out there that needs your guidance and that needs your expertise and your way of thinking. Your map of the world matches their map. So don't think that you need to be any certain way other than exactly as you are. The perfect client is out there for you. That would be my biggest one. And have courage in yourself that you know, it will happen for you. Confidence grows. Courage to start is really what you need more than anything.
Courage before confidence.
Courage before confidence, absolutely. And that changed my life. You know, there's a quick analogy, and then I'll let you go because I know you've got a lot of busy things to do. But quick analogy that really rang home for me was I went over to Ireland recently, which is not something I'd ever think of doing, but having gone through all the coaching and changed my life and changed the people I've been around, I'm going to go on tour to Ireland. So I took my music over to Ireland, went on tour. And I hadn't driven a manual car more than twice in my entire life because they scared the crap out of me. The whole idea of being on a hill and rolling into somebody else and smashing their car was a nightmare for me. So my manager bought me a wee little car. And there's the Irish thing, the wee little car. Bought me a little car to drive around in. And, of course, it was manual. So I've gotten in this car, no confidence whatsoever in myself to drive this thing. I'm like, oh, crap. I'm like, you know what? I'll just stay on flat roads the whole time I'm over there until I'm confident enough to drive. So I took the courage to drive the car in the first place. Well, Ireland doesn't have a whole lot of little flat roads. No. There's all of these.
It's like San Francisco.
Exactly. So I went to the center of Monaghan town and ended up on a hill. Biggest, worst nightmare, heavy traffic, and cars, stole the car. And went, oh, crap, put it back in gear, lit it up again, stalled the car, rolling backwards, crap. Long story short, I finally got it going. Now, over time, it was about 2 or 3 weeks, I was skipping gears, I was driving through town, I was in and out of traffic, I was sticking it in neutral, like there was no problem whatsoever. Now, to start with, I didn't have the confidence to do that. But I had the courage to drive the car in the first place and the confidence over the 2 or 3 weeks, I was driving that thing like a rally car driver. So.
And you had the dissonance to forget that there was a lot of hills already so you could get
Exactly. So ultimately, look, if there's one thing that I could impart, just have the courage to start. It doesn't matter what it is. Just do it. You will have the answers when the time comes.
Yeah. Beautiful words. I love the analogy as well. But yeah, I think that's a really good place to wrap up for today. For anyone that wants to find out more about you, what you do, whether it's the music, whether it's the coaching, where can they find you? What are your avenues?
So as far as the coaching, Gypsy Willow Transformations is the name of my coaching company, or GWT Coaching. So it's gwtcoaching.com. For the website, and then for the music, it's Jesse Jackson, JESSEY Jackson.com.
Yeah, exactly. Best musician name I've heard in a long time, Jesse Jackson.
I know.
Rolls off the tongue. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll have to do a part two in a couple of weeks. I feel like there's more stuff to do. If you do want a part two with Jesse, let me know. Feel free to comment. If you have any questions for her as well, post them up on the YouTube on YouTube or on the podcast app. Feel free to leave us a 5-star review and share it with someone who you feel could use it. So thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to working with you again soon. So till we see you all next time, be bold. Have fun, make an impact. We'll see you all on the wild side. Take care.
That's it, Tribe, for another episode of The Wildcast. Please make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Give us a review on iTunes and jump on over to our YouTube channel to catch the video version of the show, because I know you'll love it. Until I see you live or online, be bold, have fun, and make an impact, and I will see you on the wild side.